And so yesterday, again, like I was supposed to have an interview. So I'm like, okay, I'm just going to go back into the deep end again and I'm going to search out how I feel. A lot of this I realized during the pandemic, you have to let yourself feel things and you have to give yourself time to feel it and to search through your emotions and to kind of see how do I feel right now versus how do I feel a couple of weeks ago? Do I feel better? Like a little check-in with yourself. I think a mental check-in is always so useful.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of the CoLab Collective podcast, where we talk about relevant topics and current events on anything tech related. Hopefully, you're having a wonderful day. My name is Aaron, your producer, and let's get into today's episode. For this episode, we have our host Josh Lowe speaking with Jarrell. Now, Jarrell is building a community within design as well called Design Check-In, and he talks about his ups and downs of freelancing and navigating the design world during this pandemic. It's another great episode full of insights and bits of knowledge, and hopefully you enjoy. Once again, if you have any questions or would like to suggest topics for us to talk about, you can reach us at teamcollabco@gmail.com or visit our website at collabcollective.ca. Once again, that's collabcollective.ca if you want to learn more about our initiatives, but hopefully you enjoy today's episode.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Collab Collective podcast. I have a special guest here today, Jarrell. If you can share a little bit about yourself, what you do, where you're from, and we can get this podcast started.
Yeah, no, for sure. Thanks for having me, Josh. It's really great to be here. If you want to go philosophical, I can do it. I won't. But yeah, so I'm a designer in Vancouver. Recently, I just discovered, so I live near you. So that's a fun fact. And I have also founded a community. Just in April, we were at 16 people, and now we're at 175, I believe.
Wow.
Yeah, so there's a lot of growth in that area. Yeah, I've been designing for, I would say, 2 and 3 years and 8 months. I like to kind of hold myself to it. And yeah, I design products. I've recently been designing dashboards. I just finished a contract role a month ago. So I'm
Nice.
kind of just looking for work right now. Whatever lands on my feet, whatever I find is a good fit.
Awesome. So I got some feedback on doing these podcasts, including yourself, just to inject a little bit more personality and a little more of my thoughts. So today I'm gonna go a little bit unscripted, and we're just gonna flow with it. But I do wanna chat about community building. Obviously, how you started Vancouver Design Check-In, and just wanted to pick your brains on like, what was the reason behind it? How you got started? Maybe we can start there, and then we'll see how things evolve.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, I love this question because every single time I do the check-in, I answer it, and then I'm like, okay, Andre, do you really want me to answer it again? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, oh, God, okay. So it's pretty rehearsed. And so the way that I started design check-in was, I guess it was out of a need. When I was in BCIT, I was looking for a community. I did a quick search. I found Design X. I didn't get in for some reason. And I didn't really find any community at BCIT that was design focused. I didn't find anything in Vancouver. So I kind of put that part of myself to rest. I said, okay, if I happen to find it one day, sure. Meetup.com, I mean, I looked in, but I didn't have any friends that were committed to go to an event full of strangers and then to be talked to and to socialize. It just wasn't a thing, because we were young, and it's still, I don't think it would be a
It's
thing.
pretty awkward, hey?
Yeah, it's, I mean, I don't want to be in a room full of strangers. No one really does. And so several years later, that's it, the pandemic hit, right? And so I was let go last year, November, from a job. Basically, a big company, Auto Trader, bought our company up. And so, yeah. And actually, I can even talk about it kind of even now, because legal stuff. Anyway, so I was let go, and then it was a mass layoff, and so I was looking for work for a while, and you know, I was taking my time. I was like, okay, I'm gonna have sabbatical. So in March, I was like, okay, I'm gonna start looking for a job. I'm ready. I got everything plotted out. I'm good. And then the pandemic hit, and I'm like, oh no, oh crap. And so, what do I do? You know, I looked at the problem. I said, hey, I need to get a job. What do I do? I need to work backwards. Mm-hmm. So I said, okay, I'm going to do all the things that I've been avoiding. Before that, I only had 140 LinkedIn connections. I didn't know anyone in the industry. I didn't try. I didn't know how to do it at all. I would go to creative mornings and I would be by myself and I'd stand literally in the corner of the room waiting for people to talk to me.
Oh, this is like prior to the Zoom meeting.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the only event that I went to several times, and I would just stand there by myself, and it was so awkward. And
wow,
I had
how many people were there?
There was quite a few.
Like 200,
maybe 100.
Okay.
It would fill up the Woodward's SFU. There's like they have their own atrium thing.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. So yeah, I remember even having one conversation with one person. That was literally the first time it struck at me, and then that was it. And I don't remember what we talked about. And then we walked away and I was like, do I have to talk to that person again? Oh God, I don't want to.
Right.
Yeah. And then I would just be that guy that would be standing there and be like, so the coffee, eh? When's the coffee going to come out? Oh, this coffee. Like I was that guy. It was so. So with that experience in mind, DesignX, I joined it. I said, okay, I'm going to do all the things I don't want to do. So I joined DesignX. I talked to this alumni kind of student coordinator from BCIT. We've been friends for a while, Amy Smith. If you're listening to this, I'm going to give you another shout out. You're amazing. And so I contacted her and was like, hey, I need help. Here are the things that I need help with. Can you help me? And she's like, yes, I can. And I'm like, okay, great. I told her, I'm like, I don't know how to ask people for help.
Mm.
And she said, well, it's actually my job. And because she literally has to work with, you know, alumni, and she couldn't turn me down. So I said, okay, all right, I guess I'm just going to do that. Okay. So that was the first person I reached out to. And then I started to notice this trend on LinkedIn. And that's where kind of the connection started to grow. People were offering help and they were willing to really give back to the community because everyone was facing such a tremendous event and people were like, okay, I want to help out in any way possible. They would, you know, they would put out a status like, how can I help you? Do you want to let's have a time to call, you know, coffee chat and whatever.
Who did you chat with?
Yeah. So I chatted with, they saw my, kind of want on someone else's status that I got through someone else. So it's like another, like this person liked this post and then I commented on that post because I saw engagement on it. And so I said, you know, I'm a UI UX designer of this many years looking for work, et cetera, et cetera. And then this person reached out and I was like, yeah, I can help you out. And then I found out she worked for WorkBC. She also had a recruiting background. So she really got into my nooks and crannies, and I was working on my portfolio and resume for a month and she completely obliterated it within an hour. Wow.
Okay.
Yeah. I honestly, so she gave me homework for the next week. And she said, okay, you need to do this checklist. And I still have that checklist. And so when I was doing it, I had this stress pimple, this big stress pimple because and this is one thing that one friend of mine was like, wow, that's really good advice. And I'm like, really? Oh, yeah, I guess. It's if someone gives you kind of life advice and it stresses you out and it makes your insides kind of weak and it makes you question your entire life, you should probably follow that advice.
Okay. So was this the checklist to follow? Was that was stressing you out?
Yeah, it was just because like I'd mentioned, a month I had my resume looked over by four industry experts and they were all like really, keen on their roles, and I they were friends of mine, so I was relying on just direct friends. No one in recruiting though, right? Mm. So that was the biggest difference. She told me about, you know, the ATS system. She told me about, you know, yeah, the ATS system was a huge thing. She told me about how to look for value in a company's profile, how to efficiently go about applying for a job, okay, keywords.
For those who don't know what the ATS system is, can you describe what the acronym stands for?
I always forget what the acronym stands for.
Okay.
So automatic something system, it tracking system, automatic tracking system. Application tracking system. There you go. Okay. Or APS, which is, same thing.
Right.
And so
it's just like a computer program that like scans all the keywords and
exactly. Yeah, right. Because I've learned from my contract role, imagine this, you have 200 applicants all vying for the same role. Okay. And you have three HR recruiters on hand and you have 200 for that one role. There are 12 roles in a big company that they're shooting for, right? How do you have time to actually go through each resume?
Right.
You don't. You just don't, because you have other responsibilities. That's one responsibility that you have out of seven that you have to do that day. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have to make it scalable and you have to make it work for the need of the person that you're applying to.
Right. Okay, so you got the stress pimple and then...
Yeah, and then... Yeah, so I got the stress pimple. She was blown away because she's like, hey, you need to get some recommendations on LinkedIn. You need like two. And she even like saw the recommendation I had. And she's like, wow, it's like you were in school and you guys were talking to each other and you literally wrote recommendation to each other in the spot. I'm like, yeah, I mean, that's kind of what happened. But like you saw through me. Okay. Anyways. So she's like, oh my God, you got seven recommendations. And she even told me she was worried about me because she was scared that like I got really choked up from that. Like she was worried that I would crumble, but I didn't. Like I took that as a challenge.
Okay.
And I've learned in my life that whenever I'm hit with a challenge or whenever I'm kind of, how do you call it? I'm stressed out, I push through that stress and I use that stress as motivation to do better work and to do more work and like, and to refine my skills. So that was the start of the journey of making connections. And then I started to realize, okay, maybe I can just start doing that, you know, doubling down on that kind of aspect. And then Design X conference happened and it was their first online conference. It was 3 days. And so when I got into a conference and I kind of sat there, it was like, it was like one of a talk and there were like four panelists and I sat there and I saw the rows of Zoom call people and, you know, some of them didn't have their cams and all of them had their cams, but they were all muted. And I was just like, man, I'm not listening. I'm not engaged.
Yeah, we've all experienced that right now.
Yeah. And, you know, I was reading, I wasn't having that many Zoom meetings because I had some interviews through Zoom, but for some reason I can kind of connect with them. So it came natural. And so when I was in this conference with so many people, I'm like, oh my God, I don't like this at all. And then there was this fire, kind of like a coffee chat hangout for an hour, and it's during lunch. And I was sitting there on my computer and I was like, one person's talking, everyone's muted. And again, the whole thing was like, how can you be like, oh yeah, unmute your, you know, unmute yourself if you want to talk. I was like, that's such a barrier.
Yeah.
You know, just unmuting yourself, being conscious that you have to not speak, thinking about not speaking, thinking about what you want to say. The flow doesn't make sense.
Right. It's kind of like being in a big lecture hall, like in, you know, university class.
Yeah.
And then like no one wants to put their hand up to whenever the professor asks like any questions, and then you know you have a question, but you don't want to be the person that.
Yeah, you don't want to be the guy in the front of the class. You don't want to be the know-it-all. You don't want to be the guy that keeps saying all the answers to the questions to the professor. You don't want to be that guy that that's a perfect metaphor for it. You're right.
Yeah totally. I think the flow is off. So so then what made you have this idea like, oh, I think I'm gonna do something different?
Okay, so I was watching a TV show, and I mentioned this TV show so many times, and I'm just going to keep telling people to watch it because it's amazing. It's called The Midnight Gospel, and it was on Netflix, and the reason why I watched it was because it's created by the Adventure Time, Pendleton Ward, and they worked with this podcaster named Duncan Trussell, and he has his own podcast called Duncan Trussell and the Family Hour. So basically, this is the broadest synopsis ever. The cartoon show is excerpts from his podcast. So it's literally almost an entire episode of his podcast turned into a cartoon show.
Okay.
And so it gets really out there, and it's very meditation kind of self-improvement focus, and it's very conversational, and it's really cool. But so in the third episode, I was watching it, and this lady was a part of this organization. I can't remember which one. And so he asked her, he's like, "Hey, how did you start your organization?" She says, "Well, I saw Bill and Ted, and I knew that they were lonely people. I don't know how, but I knew. And so we met every single week on the same spot, and we just met." And so a couple of weeks later, they met, or they asked Ted and Fred, and through word of mouth, more people joined, and that's how I have my organization.
Mm.
And I was like, oh my God, that's so simple. And I remember on the walk, I remember exactly where I was, and I remember me on my phone ideating this in a thread within the chat, because I'm like, hey, who's from Vancouver here?
Mm.
And then I'm like, and people were, you know, giving me emojis and like kind of commenting in the thread. I'm like, oh my God, there's designers in Vancouver.
Yeah.
And so I just started to say, hey guys, who wants to join this community that I feel like I want to build, because I've been in this Slack community for a little bit. And the only way that I've noticed how I can kind of engage in the Slack community was to help out people with their portfolio, because again, like I felt like I was really helped out of, and I wanted to kind of share that experience and right. share what I know. So that's kind of what I did. And so through that ideating, I created this small community. There were like 8 people. And we had our first meeting on a Thursday, and I wanted it bi-weekly because I got tired from like weekly meetups. I was also part of Iterate UX, and that was weekly. And I was like, I'm kind of getting burnt out as well from this already. Mm. Because again, it was the same effect that like one person talked and then everyone muted themselves. And I was like, I really don't enjoy this. And so, yeah,
it was really just an experiment. Hey, like you just, let's just give it a shot. You had some people to reach out to, and you found out they're local designers in Vancouver.
Yeah.
Okay. So how did the first meeting go?
It was like, amazing.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So prior to like, were like, did you have any expectation? Like, ooh, you know, maybe I should, it's a no agenda. You just show up.
Yeah.
Go on in. Let's just chat. Let's just review like a portfolio.
Okay. So I had notes, and I had like, okay, this is what I have. I still have that Word doc, and it's very broad. It's like, I want this place to be a check-in, because I want to check in with you about your mental health. I want to check in with you, mm-hmm. what you're doing right now. I want to check in with what you're struggling with. I want to check in with, you know, your needs outside of design, in design, anything around that area. That's where the birthplace of the name came from.
Right.
And so I also wanted to include obviously Vancouver design, because, you know, I want to make sure that people know Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I did that, and we had Andre and Max, you know, the first two, yeah. And it was a riot. We were laughing. It was a 2.5 hour call. I didn't put any limitations on the subjects that we talked about. I didn't put any emphasis on any subject that we should talk about. I just was like, what's up?
Yeah. What do you think, like, was the need that really brought people in and to stay?
It's the need that we just want human connections. And we want to feel like, we want to feel normal again. And we want to hang out at a bar. We want to hang out at a cafe. We want to make friends with other people. We want that thing that the pandemic kind of took away from us. I don't want to be lectured. To me, I feel like I've done so much learnings, and I've done so much back when I first started my job. took a year and a half just to learn about UX, even though mostly I was doing UI. And so now I can kind of say that, yes, I have so much knowledge about UX and stuff, but not as much hands-on, but that's fine. And so I can kind of get away with that. And so the theory is there, but that human element, it's crazy. You get so many ideas just talking to people. You learn things that you don't expect.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to create any expectations, because I believe, and I truly believe, people in my community, people outside, I believe that whatever you put value into something, you get out of.
Right.
You put in the work into, say, your portfolio, you get out of whatever you put in that work into it. If you believe in whatever you do and that it brings value to others, that value comes back to you in ways that you never expected it to come.
Mm. Yeah, true. It's really true. That's interesting. Yeah, I kind of saw a similar thing in Vancouver. Like, there are a lot of meetups out there, but like how I started with Collab Collective, it actually had to rewind like over a year ago when I was still at Red Academy. And I was fairly new, right? Because mm-hmm. I was coming from engineering background, so completely new to the industry. And then I started Juice Labs, which is more of an in-person like dinner event thing. But for me, that was a way for me to like get to know the local design community. But I found out like after running a few, like people were saying, hey, this is actually really fun. And I was like, oh, the last thing I wanted to do was to like make another meetup that was the same, but people were saying, no, this is pretty unique. What you have, like, oh, okay. I would, you know, assume that there would be so many other, design meetups or whatnot. And there are, but apparently people are still kind of, I don't know, looking for like a genuine place to just connect and just yeah. be themselves. So,
yeah, exactly. And part of the reason why I wanted to join other communities, and that's when I started noticing that I have a problem, you know. It wasn't something that maybe other people might share the same thing. Mm-hmm. Turns out it worked, and I just kind of was like, okay. I honestly, for 4 months, people didn't show up, and I think I only had 4 calls in 4 months, and I would just sit there just waiting for people to join, and I'm like, all right, Andre, you said that you were gonna come. And then when I kind of tell him, I'm like, he's like, oh, sorry, I just accepted all of them. I'm like, okay, thanks, Andre. So maybe just, so it was kind of hard to keep going. And I was like, when is the time for me to actually market it? And that was like the one thing that I was playing around in my head. Like, when is it time to be like, hey, guys, I actually have this community. So that's when I started to like, I looked at the City of Vancouver thread on DesignX, and there's 600 people there and nobody's talking.
Oh, okay. Oh, in Slack.
Yes.
Okay.
And I knew Slack was also a good platform because DesignX also tried to use a new platform, and then people got really frustrated and there was no engagement.
Oh, interesting.
Because Slack is integrated with so many of our work. It's already integrated with our work, Slack. So transition's easy.
Yeah, okay, so I told you this before, but yeah, Slack's good, but I feel like it's just so saturated and flooded. Mm-hmm. Like every channel is all lit up white, and I feel like I just can't, it's hard to manage. So that's why I kind of switched over to Discord.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I think if you have enough people in there, you're going to experience the same thing. But for some reason, I just don't bother checking my messages on Slack because it's just like so many other workspaces, and I don't know, like, do you have any advice on that or
yeah I'm a very reactive person. And so whenever I see like a checklist, I kind of want to crush it, but I don't like making checklists, or else I like crush it right away, so it's just, it bothers me. So I see little notifications. And
a little
I see,
red bubble with the number.
And I see the white thing, and I like, okay, I can crush this. And then like an hour and a half later, I'm like, oh no. So yeah, like I said, I'm very reactive. And so when it comes to messages like that, I get it out of the way really quickly. I've also learned that effective Slack communication is key. And whenever I make posts on Slack, I always put it in the description. Because I believe that we're all browsing through Slack. We all have Slack messages, you're right. But I want to make it as simple as, for the person to click on it. I also like tagging people into things that I find relevant for them. So during the huge growth of the community, there was maybe 10, and then it became 33, and then it became 100, and then now it's 180, in like that kind of sequential order, because I started posting it to other groups. And during that time, I just started to notice like, okay, there's not as much engagement, so I'm going to start engaging. Mm-hmm. I'm going to start helping other people. I'm going to start talking to more designers. I talked to designers for 2 months straight. My calendar was booked up with full-time work at the time. Like it was nuts. It was fun though. And you learn what people want. You learn what people need. You learn big issues. And so that's what I started to realize. Okay, if I send people jobs, if I send people, you know, these things that I don't need or these things that I've learned and that they need, I'm just going to tag them because I'm, for some reason, when I talk to people, I always have them on my mind.
That's cool. So, okay, you've talked to a lot of people. Like, what is like a common need that you see among, I guess there's so many different types, right? Like among, say, juniors versus seniors, are they all similar or different?
Yeah, I love it when someone comes to me and they have something specific to talk about. And they kind of, they're upfront about it, because when I've had people book time with me and it's like, okay, where's the point, you know?
Right.
Honestly, like
want someone to talk to them,
which is nice. I like that. Honestly, I like that. But it's kind of like, you also need to know how to use your time efficiently, and you need to know how to gauge the person's reaction. Mm-hmm. So I would say the biggest need is just learning how to apply for jobs, portfolio stuff.
Okay.
Things that recruiters deal with, you know, when they ghost you, and how to, you know, craft the best resume and have the best portfolio and those kind of things, I think, and making connections on LinkedIn. That's a networking. That's a huge black hole that I don't think really a lot of people know how to do.
Okay, I would love to talk about like freelancing, because, and I know you've done a little bit of that in contract work, because I think in terms of networking, like that's kind of where really it's at, right? Like you kind of get your gigs not so much from like your employers or other people like that, but it's just from your peers, just like hearing about other gigs and then doing that. So what's your experience been like, picking up like contract work or like learning how to network through freelancing?
Okay, so before I had a LinkedIn network, before pandemic, you know, 2000 years ago, it came to me, someone found me on my website, emailed me, was like, hey, I like your work and stuff. I thought it was a spam. I'm like, what the hell? And then when I emailed back, you know, they were competent, they had ideas, and then so we met up in person the first time.
Oh, okay.
And I was only a year into design. I asked my manager, hey, how much do you charge you freelance? He's like, oh, charge like $45. And I'm like, okay, sure, why not? Did it. Mm. You know, I'm a junior, but I was like, whatever. I can learn on the spot. I don't care.
Yeah.
I subcontracted that that work too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. I had a friend do the development of it. We split the money. Done.
Mm.
It was easy. It was dead easy. So I had a really good experience the first time.
What was it, a web design job?
No, it was a dashboard. So they were a printing company in New Westminster, and they needed like a new dashboard. And so it was pretty simple. It was like a very simple job. But, you know, you need to give yourself some hourly leeway. And, you know, you need to kind of, you know, you make sure that you take care of yourself and make sure it's worth your time, because clients can be very frustrating. And I've learned that.
Yeah.
Very, very frustrating. A lot of them don't know what they want. At all.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So the second freelance that I had was, I would say, 2 years later, and it was through a cousin's friend. That one didn't go really well at all. You know,
stay away from the family connection.
Yeah. You know, friend, long time, whatever. But I didn't know that there was an owner of the business. She was just, you know, in charge of the clinic, but there was the owner, and the owner was the one who was making decisions, and he had unreasonable expectations that didn't make any sense. And he even wanted to see me in person because, I don't know, something about trust in person. I don't know. It was a weird, he was a weird, weird guy.
Gotcha.
I got paid for it, you know, made sure to get paid. And that's a key thing. Make sure you get paid early. Make sure you get, there's a deposit, you know, do whatever you can.
What would be your own like policy?
Okay. Now my policy is okay. And I have to keep this in mind, especially even if it was a family thing, you know, that's, you need a deposit when you start the job. You need like, I don't know, let's say 20 or 30% deposit or even 50% deposit. I think that would be pretty smart.
Yeah, I usually go 50% up front and then 25 after a certain milestone's done. Yes. And then when the full job's done, then final 25.
Exactly. Have a project scope in the start. Have like milestones of when you'll get paid and when the deliverables. For example, 50%, you start, you know, you do your brainstorm and whatever. And then you set out your ideas. Final design after, I don't know, two iterations and feedback. That's your milestone. So that's the 25% that's missing. And then delivery of website or delivery of the product, the full product at its final stage, that would be the next 25.
Got it.
And for, and for a contract role, I would definitely, especially if the company doesn't have any designers or if they blatantly tell you that they don't know any design, I would highly suggest that you make your own project scope of what you believe the project actually is. You know, break down what you think the guidelines are, break down the date, break down the expectations, break down measurables, break down everything that you can think of that you know about the project and what they're expecting from you in a very sequential, simple document.
Yeah, I think that's, it's really key to manage the scope and expectations with the client. And then revisit it along the way because it's going to naturally evolve, right?
Yeah, sorry, owners, you know, company people, we can't make Facebook and we can't make Google for you and Apple all the time. Like that's not it's not a thing. It's just we can't make it pop and shimmer and, you know, jump out of the windows. We're not mind readers.
Yeah, I've been learning to like do it with the client, like the planning. Because I think when you do that, instead of saying, hey, you're hiring me to be the professional, let me do everything, which is fair enough. Yeah. That's true too. But I know just my experience with clients, there are some who need to feel like they're part of the process. And I think when you do it alongside with them and then you suggest, make like strong recommendations, that would be kind of the best approach.
Now, how do you deal with a client that is very confident in what they believe in, will throw out rhetoric that somewhat makes sense in the industry, but then still kind of tells you like, you know, in the first interview, I don't know what your process is, but then we'll begin to like lay out things that they think they know.
And if they ask me if they like they don't know my process, but then they start to like pave their process.
Yeah. And
I think it all starts with the kickoff meeting or the first meeting, even before like signing the agreement. Just have that chat, like high level talk on like what is the scope, what is the budget, what's the timeline, and just from those basic topics, you can already get a sense of like what type of people they are. Yeah. And then I always ask like, what type of person are you? Like, are you a person who likes to be very hands-on throughout the process or hands-off or something in between? Mm-hmm. And then once they gave me an answer, it gives me a good gauge of like what they're like. Hands-off is obviously the best because then they trust you. And those are the clients where like they're busy and they actually value the idea of, you know, outsourcing it to a professional. If they are, I think Yeah, if they are just really hands-on and micromanaging like that is a red flag,
mm-hmm.
at least for me. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to work with people like that. So, but I don't know. You have to just go through it. And it's all, I think, part of, that's when, like, the soft skills of communication and, like, managing expectations and being clear is very crucial. And then also, like, if they are very hands-on, but just say, hey, look, I'm going to, like, before, here's my proposal and these are the milestones and these are the timelines, we're gonna hit these things, do you agree? And yeah, you make them and you agree together, and then when they do deviate, which they naturally do because mm-hmm. maybe, you know, they get excited and it's very emotional, and then they're like, oh no, and like, actually I changed my mind on this, you can always go back to the original agreement and say, no, we agreed on this, and if you want to do more, then okay, I'd love to do that, I'll charge at an extra cost, right?
Yeah.
You have to, like, I think you have to be really good at your setting up your expectations and agreement.
Mm-hmm. And just to further that, you're totally right. And the best way to do it is to have it in writing.
Yes. Yeah.
Have every single thing, documentation. Oh my God. Documentation. I am in love with documentation. I'm in love with Notion. I know you too.
Yes, shout out Notion again.
No, shout out Notion. If you want to sponsor Josh, this is the time. Because, I have everything in Notion. I document every single thing. I have a working journal that I would update like every single day or at least every week, no matter what. Especially if it's a slow week, I do like the week. But it helps a ton when you're making your portfolio. You can have all the headings in this beautiful kind of sequential order. You have all the nitty gritty details. You already have all the pictures, the screenshots planned out from the get go. So then when you're working on your portfolio, it takes a day. Like mine took a day rather than when I updated it last year, it took me a month. I mean, yes, I coded it, but writing out my content, and I reflected back like literally yesterday, because I was supposed to have an interview, and I reflected back onto it, and I'm like, oh my gosh, my content isn't great, and now I know why. Like it just was so long that it took for me to update it, and it's brutal. I found that when you're doing your resume and do your portfolio, it's brutal to see all your work, and it's brutal to like reflect back on all the stuff, and you're like, sometimes you feel like you didn't do anything.
Yeah, I think you're right. So having that habit to document while you're doing the work is good, because when you look back 6 months, a year from then on, it's so hard to remember all the details. So that's a hard process to like refine your portfolio projects and makes all the, you know, messy stuff into something pretty.
Yeah. Yeah, even if it's rough notes, even if it's thing, you kind of got to hit when the project's hot in your head, you gotta hit that iron, you know, you gotta strike when it's hot, and you gotta use that stress. Because I remember like a week after the contract wasn't renewed, I had an interview with EA, and I was like, okay, I really gotta update my portfolio. I'm like kind of, you know, not really in a great mood, but I gotta use that stress that I was feeling as motivation to create the content and to create all that work. And then I did it, and so it has bad feelings associated with it. Honestly, because, you know, when you do something when you're stressed out, there's bad feelings associated with it, and you don't want to go to it. You don't want to look at it several weeks later, you know? Mm-hmm. And so yesterday, again, like I was supposed to have an interview, so I'm like, okay, I'm just going to go back into the deep end again, and I'm going to search out how I feel. A lot of this I realized during the pandemic, you have to let yourself feel things, and you have to give yourself time to feel it and to search through your emotions and to kind of see how do I feel right now versus how do I feel a couple of weeks ago? Do I feel better? Like a little check-in with yourself. I think a mental check-in is always so useful. And so I mentally checked in with myself. I looked at my project. I looked at the content from a better perspective, from a more healthier lens. And I realized it looks good and it reads good, and there's some missing elements, but I wouldn't have picked up on that missing elements, nor would I want to actually fix those missing elements had I actually looked at it fresh from the wound.
Mm. That's a good point. I think, especially now we're always at home, like mm-hmm. every and work and life is all blended together. So it's important to like just have that moment to pause, check in, and kind of get a gauge of like where we're at and then reassess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
When that EA kind of thing didn't pan out because, you know, there was some internal things, they were doing a lot of shifting in to the positions, whatever. I got all like giddy, so I was like shopping online, like, oh, what am I gonna do when I get money again and whatever. and I'm like, okay, EI's got my back, so you know, we're good for a while. Because luckily my employer also gave me EI because they don't do contract roles very often, so they were paying for that. So after the fact, I'm like, okay, crap, I didn't get it. I was close. They really liked my profile. What do I do now? You know, because it's Q4, it's quarter four, meaning that it's the end of the year. All the budgets are set for companies, and they're going to start hiring next year in January. That's when they have their budget. It's set. And I even talked to a head of product at a company, and she said, oh yeah, I don't know why we're hiring. Let me check my team. That shouldn't be there. I'll check. But next year we're going to be hiring 6 people. So I'm like, oh, okay. So it is true. So I have to hunker down. I have to say, what's the long term of my process? How am I going to stay mentally sane? How am I going to make, you know, my resume building and, you know, all that, the output, how am I going to make it so easy and so simple that I actually want to do it, or that it's because it's stressful and I don't like doing it. I don't like applying to jobs.
Okay. So I have to ask, obviously this is all necessary. It's all part of the process. If you want to apply and work for a company, what about doing freelancing and taking that route?
Freelancing and taking that route. Well, again, like I have to say that I have EI is under, they're checking it out right now. Right.
Right.
And with freelancing, I haven't been that much of a fan of it personally. I applaud people who can do it, and I think that's amazing if you have the contacts and you know how to network in that area. I think if I were to double down in my network to that area, I guess I could, but I just found that for me, I don't like really working with clients as much as it's the whole client relationship thing. It's the kind of communication element is not easy, and it can get misconstrued really badly, and I've had that experience before. It's the unsurety, you know, you're unsure when your next paycheck is, kind of thing. And you know, you have huge highs, you have huge lows, you have quiet times, you have all that. So I've never really talked to anyone in my life that's really freelance full time, or that's really given me much advice on it, and I haven't really pried into it because it's not really I like stability, I guess. That's
right.
And I like growth in a stable job.
Yeah, fair enough. That makes sense. Because my take on it is, I think regardless whether you work with a client or not, you're going to have some person to like work for, whether like if it's not a client per se, then it's like your boss, right? Mm-hmm. Or if you're a project manager for a company, you are working like for the company's client.
Mm-hmm.
So you're kind of doing that regardless. So my take on it is, if you're going to already do that in a company, or if you're higher up, might as well do it for yourself, and mm-hmm. then you set your own terms and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's with me, with, you know, 7 years of working as a project manager in engineering, and now I'm just realizing
exactly you have to do my own thing. Yeah, you have a refined process, and mm-hmm. that's one thing, is having that refined workflow and the refined process after so many years of communicating with so many different kinds of clients. One day I've always considered thinking about, okay, probably will freelance one day. I want to consult. Like I want to be like Steve Krug and be on an island consulting UX for like big companies around the world. Like that's one of my big dreams, you know, maybe have a studio of just like designers or something like that. Or I don't know, like I have entrepreneurial dreams. I always have big dreams, and I know that I'll get there one day. It's more like whatever path I take, I know that whatever seed that I drop, whatever thing that I do now, incrementally pushes me to that spot, no matter how small, no matter if it's a millimeter, no matter how, if it's a big leap. Like I took a huge leap this year in my growth, in my so that's something that I didn't expect, but I always knew would happen eventually. I just have that faith in myself, I guess.
Gotcha. Yeah. Looking for the signs, right? Yeah. You got to wait until the opportunities come and you jump on it.
Exactly. And I haven't found any good opportunities, and or else I would have jumped. Or I've already thought through the process. I've already thought through the problem. I've already thought through, like, how am I going to get there? And if it's not feasible, and if it's not scalable, and if it doesn't make sense to my values, then I'm not going to actually attempt to do it.
Right. Gotcha. It's interesting though. So with Vancouver Design Check-In, like in terms of opportunities, you kind of like made your own opportunity, right? Because you took the initiative to like create this space. Yeah. Just wondering if you can like take that mindset and apply that to like freelancing, but I guess it's a lot harder, right?
Yeah. I think you can, because I was looking at a Chris Doe post, and I will never forget about this. And he was talking about influencers on Instagram, and I guess you can even take that as freelancers or whatever you want, right? So if you're freelancing, you can kind of use that. But he said that if you comment on someone that's relevant and that's someone that you admire, you can utilize their audience. Let's say that they have 10K and you use their post and say, you know, what you like about it, what you think can improve, or what value you can bring. You can use that, their post, as a big kind of poster for your own need. You can get traffic to your own place. I've been learning to do that kind of nonstop. It's kind of like this thing. Networking for me now is almost as easy as breathing. Like I've done it so many times now. It's fun. And so I utilize people's posts on LinkedIn. I utilize that as a kind of billboard for my own needs. I'm always thinking about the needs of others. So I'm always like, okay, this post would tie into this person. This, you know, this need would tie into this person that I talked to, or I've seen this need kind of around. Let me comment on that. I think that really ties into freelancing, because you can find opportunities by helping others. And that's happened to me before. I've been offered things because I've been helping others. I've been offered things because of Vancouver Design Check-In. I made that opportunity. And so Vancouver Design Check-In has kind of created this beautiful loop. Kind of my career, you know, me being in the industry, me being local, me being like a kind of connector of other people in the industry. It's created this beautiful loop that I just love so much. Everything that I do is now just kind of focused solely on that.
That's awesome. What do you think is lacking right now in the Vancouver design community space?
Yeah, it's definitely the awareness that we have really good designers. It's the awareness of the companies that are hiring these designers. Like, job descriptions don't say anything really about the company. Glassdoor doesn't really either.
Right.
You know, they're all just kind of fluffy words that every single job description keeps repeating on, and it's just looking for keywords for your ATS resume, and it's just like this kind of vicious loop. But what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to break down, and I'm trying to highlight, I really want to highlight who we are in Vancouver, who these designers are, past, you know, what they do for a living, but what they love to do, and get to heart of who they are.
Interesting. Very cool. Starting to give me some ideas.
See, that's the beautiful part, like making these connections, doing these calls. You get more ideas the more you talk to others, because you see your own words through a different lens, or you see other people's perspectives that you would have never ever thought about, even through reading books or through videos or through, you know, you get that kind of validation maybe.
Yeah, I think like the main sources of information on design is like mostly from the States. You know, I consume a lot of the stuff from the future, yeah, still, so that's great. But yeah, in terms of like local Vancouver stuff, it's there, but I don't think it's, like you said, I don't think the awareness is as high. So I think if we keep like reaching out to the people and spreading the message, I think it'll help create this like local vibe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Toronto and Montreal apparently have that vibe.
Yeah, so Toronto has lots, and then so DesignX is probably the biggest community. But I guess you have some criticisms with that community. I remember Leon saying like at one point when they were starting, they were really intimate, very close, and then there was this kind of switch where they kind of, I guess, went global.
Mm-hmm.
And then that close vibe kind of disappeared. And I think that's something where we just want to like foster again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's definitely a need. And that's what I've discovered. Even I've had people from Montreal and Toronto, they want to move to Vancouver, they join the community. I have people in LA that just want that kind of community feeling as well. I have people in New York as well who are interested, developers. I have people around the world. I don't really want to open the floodgate too much, but I do want international perspectives, and that's kind of what I always lead in with. I love people from different parts of the life being interested in what we're doing in Vancouver and what the design community is doing, and I don't even want to limit it to design as well. Like I try to get some marketers involved, recruiters, developers. I want to get,
yeah, definitely,
like I said, more perspectives on the matter. But again, it's always, let's focus, what can we do to make design, the community here, better and more focused and more. Max, I mentioned him earlier, but he said that when he went to a DesignX conference, he noticed that people in person, they would stick to their own pods. They would stick to who they know. And that's really what upset him. He was volunteering and he would be the bridge between other chats and other pods, because he'd go up to them and be like, hey, do you want to merge with this pod?
Right.
But everyone knew each other, and that bothers me so much. And I just, or didn't know each other, but they knew each other coming in small pods. Yeah.
Okay. So what do you think is like, what's missing there? What's causing that?
It is that kind of silo effect. All the designers in Vancouver are in their own silo. They're in their own friend group. They're only focused on their own organizations with the designers from them. But you're never going to learn truly about what's happening around Vancouver if you're not going to step outside of your bubble. You're not going to learn about the cool events and the cool people and the cool techniques that other people are doing, the cool tools. I've learned so much just helping others. I asked this one thing in DesignX, and I was like, hey, I need this automated tool for my documenting, or sorry, not for my documenting, but for my transcription.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe one person kind of commented on there, and then another person just randomly DM'd me like, hey, what are you using it for? I'm like, oh, I'm using it for this. And then we went down this whole path. We started to realize that we were pretty alike. He's a product lead, Aaron, really cool guy. And then we even, he's like, oh, I'm making my own product, by the way. Do you want to test it? And I'm like, yeah, I do want to test it. So I tested it. And then when I was testing it, after the test, he told me like, hey, this is my process, by the way. It's like, it's really easy. And I'm like, oh my God, that's so smart. I would have never thought about that process. And he's like, oh yeah, man, like you should totally do it. I'm like, this is it. This is what I'm searching for. This is the help that you don't expect. This is the process that makes your life easier. This is how you need to make these connections. You need to ask for help, and this is how you get it.
Interesting. Yeah, for sure. Like there's a lot of nuggets of wisdom like hidden right there. It's available. You just have to kind of step out. Mm-hmm. Do you think though it's the format that's the issue with like the existing communities that are like meeting up right now? Because for me, I've always believed in like the creating the right environment. If you can have like a very welcoming, warm like vibe, and like that's what I did with Juice Labs. We did it over like a family meal, so people always love gathering around food. And it's an evening, and then we have like a guest, and we always made sure like when people arrived, we like welcome them. Whereas oh man, I've been to so many networking events. It was super awkward. And that was the number one complaint, like people who have been in the industry for like 10 years, they say, is like, I still hate networking events. They feel like they can only enjoy it if they have a wingman or a friend. Because there's like no, welcoming vibe. So for me, that's what I see. But I wonder if there's anything else that you see that's missing.
No, you're 100% right. And that's, I think that's from the get-go. That's always what I wanted to strive for and make that user experience
work. Exactly.
Really, really well. And no, I didn't have to do this crazy detailed analysis, all the process, whatever. I just looked at what I wanted and what I saw was a problem. And then I just fixed it really quickly. And then I just honestly, every single time I start design check-in, I grab a beer. I'm like, hey guys, who wants to chill out with me? I'm like, hey, what's up? Introduce yourself kind of thing. All right, let's kind of, you know, oh, and then what I always, always, always want to kind of point out is that I listen intently and I give them feedback on what they're saying. It's this weird thing that works, and I've discovered it. If you really listen and you kind of point out things that they're saying, you bring in like some comedy into it. You make fun, you point out some logic things, you make this atmosphere. It's like we're all capable of being, you know, not perfect, and we're all capable of our own fallacies. And if we're pointed that out, you create that vibe like, oh, okay. So, you know, there's no one is quote unquote safe, AKA, you know, we're all friends. We're all family here. We're all just willing to kind of shoot shits.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think that was the first swear word of the podcast. Alert.
Hey, that's on like PG-13 shows. I've heard that on TV when I was a kid. And so that's not a swear word.
All good. Cool, man. Well, I think we should wrap up. But is there anything else that you want to like say or share in regards to anything, I guess, like on the community? If those who are interested or shy or hesitant or experiencing like a silo effect, like how do they get involved, or what would you encourage them to do?
I think the community is starting to get better. I think with these online events, and I think with Design Buddies and what Iterate UX and what DesignX are doing, I think it's great. And I think the connection is there, but I think there are better ways to make those smaller impacts onto the community, and you know, people really feel it. I had one person who DM'd me right after one of our meetings, and he found us on Google, and he literally joined during a call. And it was incredible. He's like, oh my God, I wish that this Slack community was like my work Slack community. You guys are so much fun. And I was like, oh my God, that's the feedback. That's such organic feedback. I've heard so much organic feedback just from people.
Nice.
I've got two people hired into jobs. Like it's becoming this thing where it's like, I just constantly want to find jobs for others. And I think if we all kind of have that mentality that we're just going to help other people when we're on LinkedIn, we're just going to find out different nuggets of wisdom and find out different ways to help others, I think that really fosters that kind of community mindset within your own community. I don't want to limit it just to my community. I think we can all help other communities, and that's what I'm also trying to focus on. One more thing is that for designers, I believe that once you start becoming a designer, I don't think you should call yourself a junior. I don't think you should call yourself aspiring. I don't think you should consider yourself transitioning. I think the first time you touch those pixels and you hold that, you know, you get into the tools and you feel like you're competent, even competent. I believe that if you situate yourself out there and you say, you know, I'm not looking for a job, but I want a job, but a job will come to me. I'm not looking for mentorship, but I know mentorship will come to me. You know, you put yourself into that position that have value, that you are worth it, and that you have things to tell others and to teach other people. I think that really sets you apart from other people.
And that's a really good point.
That will put yourself into the higher ranks, and that will put yourself into, you know, making yourself more known into the community. Use branding, use LinkedIn, use other people's, you know, their followers. Use whatever you can under your tool belt and get your name out there, and you'll see what happens.
Awesome. I think that's why we love collaborating with you and your community because we have that similar value, or we just really want to help people out and give them a resource. So if they want to join your Slack, what's the name? Is it VancouverDesignCheckIn.slack.com? Is that right?
I'm not actually sure.
We will find that out. We'll put it in the description. Yeah. So.
And because I have a link and I don't want to, it took months for people to even, because they were all asking for a logo and it took us months just to make a logo because to me, I wanted,
it's on my phone. I'll find it.
Okay. But the link expires. It's like a 30-day link. I can restore it.
The workspace and request to join on Slack.
I don't know. You're going to have to teach me how to do all this stuff.
Okay. Well, if you guys can, it's vandesigncheckin.slack.com. I'll add it in the description. Vandesigncheckin.
Josh, you're teaching me new things.
Yeah. And any other asks that you want to put out?
No, I feel like I covered everything. Watch this. Cool. After this call, I'm going to think about all the things I said instead, and I'll just message you. And that's
put it on LinkedIn.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, guys. I hope you guys enjoyed this. If you guys want to get involved, just reach us out. And also a little plug on our end. We are looking for additional help. So if you do want to get involved and also like get connected with people like Jarrell and people in the Vancouver design community, reach us out on Instagram or email us at teamcollabco@gmail.com. We're just looking for people for like social media or just, you know, getting engaged and stuff like that. So have a wonderful day, and we'll see you guys next time. See you.